Hi, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. And these moments that you're about to see highlight the stories that you need to know about today.
Israel is the only country in the Middle East and one of the few countries in the world that stands up for Christians.
Stop sending our children to endless wars!
There's nothing I can do that call out Israel's genocide and then everybody swarms.
No.
This is thing that you can't say.
We're waging a war in the name of Israel, and we all know it! When does it end, Donnie?
In my view, the United States cannot and must not make loyalty to a particular theology about Israel a litmus test for protected speech or moral legitimacy.
That is Carrie Prejean. That's the woman who stood up against religious discrimination in America. Religious discrimination has targeted Palestinians. That's targeted Christians in the United States. And because of that, she has won the respect of millions of people in the country for her courage. The type of courage that few women, hell, few men usually display these days. She is going to join us here live on this show. This is The Sanchez Effect. Let's get started. Hello again, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. We've been told that Iran supports terrorists who attack Israel. But what if I told you that Hamas, one of those terrorist organizations, was supported and funded from within Israel itself, that Israel's very government supports Hamas. Think about what that would mean, right? Wouldn't it mean that everything that happened after October 7th was possibly some kind of Machiavellian plan? If the people who were attacked supported their enemy, that this whole thing maybe was causal? That it was possibly even a manufactured pretense? You see, tens of thousands of civilians have been massacred because of Hamas. A war with Iran that we see now, with Lebanon, with Iraq, are now underway, in large measure because of Hamas. You're Hamas. You can't help Hamas. We hear this all the time. So how horrible would a person have to have been to help Hamas, to prop up Hamas, to feed Hamas, or to, worse, fund Hamas? And wouldn't you want to know who that person is? So what if I told you right here that the person who did this has actually already admitted to it, and that he did so in a secretly recorded conversation with police? He thought this conversation would never get out. It was a secret recording, after all. Here is part of this documentary I'm talking about. And the guy I'm talking about, the person I'm talking about who funded Hamas, is none other than Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu. Here's a clip from a documentary about his corruption case that is now being revisited.
Netanyahu, who is against peace and who is against having a Palestinian state, dealt with Hamas for a long time as a strategic friend.
I send them messages, I help them, I mislead them. So he was doing this, talking to Hamas, funding Hamas. So is Netanyahu responsible for October 7th because he empowered Hamas, or worse, because he wanted them to attack on October 7th to maybe use that as a pretense, right, to go after the Palestinians? Israelis that have been interviewed for this documentary ask, does it matter either way whether he was doing intentionally or unintentionally, if it ended up bringing about the same result? Here, listen.
Netanyahu was all the time helping Hamas to survive.
At the same time that he was under investigation, he arranged for Hamas to receive $35 million every month from Qatar.
Netanyahu can't give the money by himself. Israel will not give money to the Hamas.
You cannot even transfer this money through banks, because even the banks don't want to cooperate. So you, the Israeli Prime Minister, needs to beg this small and very rich country, Qatar, to give money to our enemy.
These suitcases of money was given to Hamas under the request of Benjamin Netanyahu personally. And because the Qatarians knew him from the beginning, they were asking him to send them his requests in writing, because they knew that he's going to lie in the future.
They knew that he would lie about it in the future. Money? What money? I had nothing to do with that money. Well, there's your signature, is what Qatar is now saying. Think about that. In all, according to sources inside Israel, Israelis, Netanyahu funneled more than $1 billion to Hamas. Meanwhile, the U.S. is now at war with Iran because it is, quote, responsible for supporting terrorists who attack Israel. Think about that. Something else. For the first time since Israel and the U.S. attacked Iran, we are now seeing large and angry protests in the streets of Tel Aviv. Watch.
Stop sending our children to endless wars!
Yeah, you're looking at some of the protesters who, by the way, knew that they would or could be arrested, but they protested anyway. Since Israel began bombing Iran, there's this law that was passed saying it is illegal for citizens in Israel to protest the war or Mr. Netanyahu. That's why, as you can see, police immediately descended on the Israelis who were protesting Mr. Netanyahu's leadership. Israelis are growing very weary of this war. Iran's missiles are getting through. They spend hours in bomb shelters almost every single day. Sirens seem to constantly be going off, and they're tiring of it. It is why, according to the government's own immigration statistics, we have found out that Israel is seeing an outflow of its population these days. More than 200,000 Israelis have not protested, but rather just left the country in the last couple of years. Meanwhile, here's one of the reasons that Israelis are leaving. This Iron Dome we heard so much about, the one that they were promised would protect Israelis, isn't. Iranian and Yemeni missiles are apparently getting through. Here's another example of this very thing. Let me show it to you. Watch. You're going to see the Qatash missile coming through right there. Look how it goes around. See that? If you look carefully, you'll see it almost looks like it's going around the interceptor, which is part of the Iron Dome. And that's been happening over and over again, surprising a lot of people. It's not only Israelis, by the way, that are angry about this war. A lot of people feel betrayed all over the United States and in cities in Europe as well. More than 8 million people came out to protest this war over the weekend, and specifically the actions of the Trump administration, who had said he would never do something like this. The protesters are urging an end to the war, which many of them say is being waged only to benefit Israel and war profiteers, the two groups with by far the most clout in U.S. politics, and with President Trump, sadly. In the Western media, this got minimal coverage, by the way, which is more reason for us to put something together to show you what it really looked like right here. And that's what we did. Watch this.
We're waging a war in the name of Israel without congressional approval, and we all know it. When does it end, Donnie?
No kings!
No Trump!
No Trump!
The prices, the war, the lies, the immigration, the Epstein files.
He lied to the people who actually voted for him.
Stop!
got to tell you something. Since I worked at CNN and NBC and Fox, all three of them, those images that you're looking at right there are generally not played in the United States, and if so, only for like 30 seconds, unless they can somehow be shown on the air as some kind of pro-war but anti-Trump demonstration that the networks do. This is what NBC, this is what CNN will do. Only if it's a negative reflection on Mr. Trump, then they'll show it. But otherwise, they won't. Because you see, while those networks are critical of Trump, they're not critical of the reasons for the war. They won't criticize this war machine that controls, in many ways, the White House, nor will they ever criticize Israel, which may control the White House and the government even more. And watch what happens when someone goes on, like, let's say, a CNN and dares to speak out about these things, dares to, for example, criticize Israel. Watch how she is assailed for saying exactly what at least half of the world is saying and reporting.
Is Iran committing genocide in Gaza right now, like the Israeli government is, which dragged us into this war, which every president prior...
number one sponsor of terrorism.
For 47 years, the Iranians have killed Americans and our allies across this world.
Okay.
They are trying to obtain nuclear weapons so they can annihilate Israel and potentially... capitals in Europe.
There's no evidence of that. The JCPOA was actually a successful deal that Obama negotiated.
I find it appalling that you're an Iranian apologist.
Yeah, this is so... There's nothing I can do to call out Israel's genocide and then everybody swarms.
No, the
United States is funding a government that an Israeli human rights group, B'Tselem, says is committing genocide, as is Amnesty International, as is every credible human rights group right now. We are... there's a massacre in Gaza. There are hundreds of thousands of people unaccounted for under rubble. That's what I define as terrorism. Now, Iran is now exerting their leverage over the Strait of Hormuz.
Well, and
Do you want the Iranians to have a nuclear weapon, yes or no?
You are a Iranian sympathizer, and the people...
Ripping their chairs?
The people that... Well, and it's not funny. The idea of,
I think it
of
is.
What... And that's scary. The idea...
Okay. Isn't that remarkable to watch that? You think she'll be invited back? I say no. By the way, they do say, as we watch that, this comes to mind, the very first casualty of war is the truth, right? How many times have we heard that? And we continue to hear that is exactly the case when it comes to negotiations between the United States and Iran right now. Mr. Trump insists that his envoys are negotiating with Iran, but more and more, it seems like that's just... It's just a flat-out lie, right? I mean, I wish I could soften my characterization of something like this, but it's become pretty obvious that the Iranians are not negotiating, and they have no interest in negotiating. And here's the latest comment on this from the foreign minister of Iran, Araghchi, who flat-out says the U.S. can simply not be trusted.
The trust level is at zero. And it's normal that when they propose negotiations, the first thing that is important for us to assess is how honest they are in the process. We don't see honesty. This trust does not exist. And for trust to be built, big steps need to be taken so that we can be in a situation where a negotiation can even take place.
You know, there's something else going on this day that I think is really important and I wanted to share with you. It's something that's happened just in the last couple of days that I don't think has gotten enough coverage also. And it's a lot of Christians around the world are very angry about this. See, for hundreds of years, Catholic bishops have celebrated Mass at the Church of the Holy Sepulchre in Jerusalem. If you've never been there, you should. It's an amazing place to visit. They've done this through wars and fires and unrests and more and never stopped. And they were there to try and mark the start of Holy Week this week. This is Easter. It's the resurrection of Jesus Christ. It's a big deal. But this year, the government of Prime Minister Netanyahu chose to not even allow them to go into the church. They weren't even allowed into the building. Yeah, that's a big deal. So they had to have it outside, as you can see right there, in the rain. Joining us now to share her view on this and a whole lot more is really one of the most courageous persons that I've seen in any official forum in my country, the United States, in a long, long time. Joining us now is Carrie Prejean, who was a commissioner for the Religious Liberty Forum in the United States. Carrie, thank you so much for joining us. I can't even begin to tell you how much I appreciate you coming on and sharing your story. I know you've already shared it with my friend Tucker and millions of people in the United States, but it would be great to hear you share it with the tens of millions of viewers that we have all over the world.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be with you.
You know, I got to start by apologizing to you, because that media that I just criticized, the one at CNN that I showed, for example, I used to be a part of that. I used to be one of the main anchors at CNN with Rick's List. I don't know if you remember it or not. And a story came along first regarding you and things that you had said. And I was one of the idiots on television back then who bought into the mainstream media narrative that people like you should be either criticized or shunned. And I was one of the people who criticized you. So I kind of want to go on the record right now and apologize to you for doing that, because I shouldn't have. It wasn't one of my best moments, but we all get caught up in things in our lives. And when you're a part of a mainstream media, you do things like that. Will you accept my apology?
Oh, that's so beautiful. Thank you so much. Of course, I accept your apology and I totally forgive you. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. I want to show you something now that made me respect you so much. This is the this commission on religious liberty that you were a part of, and other very important prestigious Americans were a part of as well. And you spoke your mind, and the whole world listened. I want to show a clip from that moment. Here it is for our viewers.
In a country built on religious liberty and the First Amendment, do you believe someone can stand firmly against anti-Semitism, including what you experienced, and at the same time condemn the mass killing of Palestinians in Gaza, or reject political Zionism, or not support the political state of Israel? Or do you believe that speaking out about what many Americans view as genocide in Gaza should be treated as anti-Semitic? Because in my view, the United States cannot and must not make loyalty to a particular theology about Israel a litmus test for protected speech or moral legitimacy. Since we've mentioned Israel a total of 17 times, are you willing to condemn what Israel has done in Gaza?
No, because I unilaterally I unilaterally reject that it's not a genocide. The only genocide ever carried out was on October 7th when Hamas tried killing every man, woman, and child they could possibly find. Hang on, let me respond.
70,000 innocent civilians killed?
Let me respond. So first of all,
condemn that?
And Carrie?
Just on the record.
Excuse me. Okay. As chair of the committee.
I think it's important we have this discussion.
I agree. I'm happy to answer.
And Carrie,
we'd be great friends.
Yeah. Carrie, I'm happy to answer.
Carrie, we have had the discussion. Good questions, good answers. This is a commission on religious liberty. If there's another commission
in
on
America,
this issue,
I don't know why we're talking about a foreign country.
They shut you down. And it wasn't only that, it was things that happened prior to that. Would you take us through the story of how we got to this point, and then we'll talk about what happened afterward?
Yeah, so it's been, almost 20 years since I've known the president, and I think that's why he appointed me to this commission. It's because of my backstory as Miss California in 2009 that I spoke the truth. I spoke my view on marriage and between one man and one woman, and he really respected me for that, and he loved that I was willing to speak out when it was unpopular. And so fast forward to this Religious Liberty Commission, someone who's faced religious persecution myself, what better person than someone who's actually experienced it? So he appointed me, the president did appoint me to this commission. And a little bit of backstory. So we were appointed in May by the president. We went in the Oval Office, we met with him, and there's only 12 of us on this commission that serve by the appointment of the president. And immediately, right after my appointment, I obviously was posting about the genocide in Gaza. I was posting about what Pope Leo was saying regarding the genocide in Gaza. And I got a call asking me to resign from this commission. And I knew right away, I knew immediately why they were asking me to resign. And I was disgusted and I was shocked that our loyalty in this country is to a foreign nation rather than to its own citizens. And my First Amendment rights, my religious freedom, was being jeopardized while serving on a religious liberty commission to protect your religious freedom. you can't even make this up. This is an absolute disgrace to our country. And since then, I have been removed, unfortunately, by the president.
So you had already stated that you had very important, truthful questions, mind you, that you wanted to bring up during this commission hearing. Did they know that you were going to do this? And if so, or did they expect that somehow you would relent and that you wouldn't, but you did anyway?
It's interesting because they had an intervention meeting right before that, what you just showed on the screen. They had an intervention meeting with a few of the commissioners before the hearing. Actually, the hearing ran late that day. Mm-hmm. And they asked me, they were kind of bullying me and they were trying to intimidate me. And they were saying, you know, what are you going to say today? We saw that you posted about Palestine on your Instagram. And we saw, you know, you've been posting things that go against the president. Your job on this commission is to protect the president. That's literally what Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick told me when he called me one day back in August saying, Carrie, you've been posting things that run afoul to the president. You've been posting things that run afoul to Paula White, to myself, and to other members of the commission. And you really can't be doing that, Carrie. So you must stay off social media. You cannot post on social media between now and the end of your term. I obviously didn't listen to him. I continued to post. And then we had that anti-Semitism hearing, which I believe I stayed very calm mm-hmm. and I asked questions and I was very respectful because we cannot have a hearing on anti-Semitism if we don't define what anti-Semitism is. So I was clarifying, is anti-Zionism anti-Semitism?
Yes.
And the answer was yes. And I reject that.
So they're saying if you want to be a Christian in the United States, or certainly if you want to be public and be a Christian in the United States, you have to accept Israel. The country of Israel. Is that what the argument seemed to be that they're making you want to say or believe in?
Yes, it's a theology. It's exactly what Ted Cruz told Tucker Carlson. It's those who bless Israel will be blessed. It's what Lindsey Graham says. If you pull the plug on Israel, God's going to pull the plug on you. This is theological. People have to understand that. And so I was a, you know, dispensational Christian before I became Catholic. So I understand this theology and I reject it. Obviously, their interpretation is those who bless Bibi Netanyahu bombs will be blessed. I reject that. I'm a Catholic. We don't believe 1948 Israel has any biblical prophecy fulfillment meaning at all. I said that from the stage and I stand by that. We believe as Catholics that we are the new Israel. We are the new people of God. Those who are in Christ are welcomed into that new covenant in Christ by faith. But no, and we're seeing now that this genocide in Gaza, they are literally wanting you to think that you must bless it, that you must support it in order for the return of the second coming of Jesus Christ to come in. Think about how blasphemous that is. That is blasphemous, and I reject that. This is a heretical teaching, and we must speak out against it.
Wouldn't that be like saying, if I criticize the actions of my government, the United States of America, for what it did in Iraq, or which, by the way, 90% of the world and the United States does that, If I criticize what we did in Iraq, or if I criticize the way the war is being prosecuted right now in Iran, then I'm anti-Christian because most of the people in the United States are Christian, so I'm actually being anti. Isn't that the same thing?
Yes, and you know what? Shame, Rick. Shame on every single one of those commissioners who sat there like cowards and who didn't speak up and say, wait a second, we are claiming that a political ideology, which Zionism is, if you are not a Zionist, was their claim that day, then you're a Jew hater. You are an anti-Semite, bigot, hateful person. That is ridiculous. That is insane. And every single one of those people, every single one of those commissioners should have spoken out against it. But you know what, Rick? They're all trying to have access to the president. They all want to have the invites to the White House. They don't want to stand for religious freedom, number one. Hmm. And they sure don't want to stand against Israel because we all know what happens when you do that.
Yeah, it happened to me to a certain extent, and I think it certainly has happened to you. Help our viewers who are all over the world watching this try and understand, because they don't understand what many of Americans have come to know within the past year, and that is that there are a group of Christians in the United States that are extremely beholden to Israel. What is that? Where did it come from, and how did it manifest itself?
Yeah, it's such a good question. So this all started by a man named Darby, and there was the Scofield Bible, and he had notes in the Scofield Bible. There was references on the side of the Bible, mm-hmm. and it basically said, it has this idea that there is a dual covenant that the Jews have a separate way to God than Christians. Uh-huh. Well, for 2,000 years, the Catholic Church has rejected that. We believe that there is one covenant through Jesus Christ, that he is the lamb that was slain, the final sacrifice. There is no more temple in Jerusalem. Mm. The temple was destroyed in 70 AD. And so this heretical teaching believes that in order for Jesus to return, that the Jews must have a land in Jerusalem. They also believe that the Dome of the Rock will be torn down and there will be a rebuilding of the third temple. They believe that there will be animal sacrifices again, which, I mean, can you imagine? Jesus is the final lamb that was slain. Now they're going to bring in animal sacrifices again. So what does that mean to Jesus? What does that mean to his final sacrifice? Him dying on the cross for our sins, you know? And so it's just this idea that was brought in the 18th century, 19th century, that really has this dual covenant, one for the Jewish people, one for Christians. And for 2,000 years, Christians have rejected that. But it's a new idea and it's a heretical teaching. And Trump, unfortunately, surrounds himself with these people that, like Paula White, Ted Cruz, Mike Huckabee, these are all dispensational heretical teachers. And that's who he surrounds himself by. And so what do you think is going to happen? Pete Hegseth is cheering on the rebuilding of the third temple in order to usher in the second coming of Jesus. So they believe literally that dead bodies in Gaza and Iran and Lebanon, they must kill those people in order to bring in the second coming of Jesus Christ. I call that blasphemous, and I say that is a heretical teaching, and I will be speaking out and continue to speak out against it.
Are some of these leaders in this movement beholden to Israel because they have formed a relationship somehow with Israel? Does Paula White travel to Israel to meet with officials? Does she get part of her funding from Israel?
It's a really good question. I was at dinner one time with Paula White, and she had told us some of the commissioners were all in a room together in D.C., and she was bragging about, you know, she just got $30 million from Israel. Now, I don't know what that means. I don't know if she's working for the Israeli government. I don't know. And I actually would like to know because I don't know. I know she has a very close relationship with Bibi Netanyahu. Mm. But I really would like to know, who is she loyal to? Is she loyal to the United States of America, or is she loyal to a foreign country? Yeah. And so we see AIPAC, we see, you know, all these politicians getting money from AIPAC. And so what do you think is going to happen? That's why I think Trump has sold out our country. I think he is showing that he is not beholden to the American people. He is beholden to Miriam Adelson, who gave him $230 million. So any politician moving forward, I want to tell the American people, do not vote for one candidate that is taking money from this genocide terrorist state called Israel. And we must not vote for one candidate that takes money from AIPAC. That's my call to action.
That's a heck of a thing coming from you. And I'll tell our viewers why. Your relationship with Mr. Trump goes way back. It goes back to when you were in the pageant, when you became a superstar in your own right, when you were Miss California, when you got to know Mr. Trump, when he asked you to join other commissions and other things. So you and Mr. Trump have had a professional relationship for quite some time now. And you were as much a cheerleader for him as anybody out there. So to hear you say this now is really different and important and impactful.
Right. I think that so many Americans feel the exact same way that I'm feeling. And you know what? Just like you, who admitted you were wrong, I will admit right now to the American people and to the world, I was wrong. I was fooled. I was convinced that this president actually wanted to make America great again. Okay. And what we're seeing now is not that. I do not recognize this president. I do not know who he is, because he promised to help the American people. He promised to not get us involved in foreign wars. And now we're seeing that we are sending boots on the ground. I'll tell you what, my son is not going to go die for Israel. He will not be going to some foreign country and die on behalf of the Israeli government. Yeah. And so shame on this president. Shame that he has betrayed the American people. I do not recognize him, and I am so sorry that I voted for him.
Yeah, you speak for a lot of Americans. Let me tell you, people I talk to, obviously, every day, and some of the people we saw in those protests that we were showing a little while ago. Let me ask you, when I was watching you, and you started telling a truth that at least three quarters of the people in the world, if not more, also believe and say and report, except, of course, in our country. But I was watching Ben Carson. I was watching Cardinal Dolan. I was watching Dr. Phil. I watched this guy, Eric Metaxas. I was watching their expressions while you were talking. And I don't know how to describe it, but they almost looked like they were fearful. Like they were like, you know, oh my God, I can't believe she's going there. She's actually saying these truths that she should know she's not allowed to say. And when Dan Patrick from Texas cut you off, and it almost looked like he felt compelled that he had to do that, that he was speaking from some higher order or something. But put me in that moment. What did you sense?
Yeah, no, I felt the exact same way. I want to clarify, Cardinal Dolan and Bishop Barron were not there that day. I really wish they would have been there. But you're right. In fact, there was a man sitting next to me by the name of Kelly Shackelford. Mm-hmm. And he, to my left, has been defending religious freedom for over 35 years. And I could see on his face. In fact, he was kind of starting to reach for the peanuts and the chocolates on the on the table. He was getting a little nervous. And I thought, oh my goodness, they cannot believe that the youngest person on this commission, a mom in California, has the courage to speak for her own religious freedom in this country. Because not only was I speaking for myself, but I was speaking for people of all faiths. You know, we cannot say that a criticism of a foreign country is now considered Jew hatred. In fact, I recommended a Jewish rabbi to come speak. Mm-hmm. I recommended four Jewish Americans to come speak. And one of them was Norm Finkelstein. And they were all rejected by Dan Patrick, I believe, because they did not want any Jewish Americans who are not Zionists to come speak on anti-Semitism. They wanted it a pro-Israel commission. In fact, I told them at the intervention, I said, you guys should just rename this to be called the Israel First Commission or the Zionist Commission, because that's exactly what you want. If you really want to hear from people facing anti-Semitism, you would hear from the Jewish rabbi who has been speaking out about Zionism for over 40 years. They didn't want that. They had their own agenda and they hijacked it that day. But you're right. They were very uncomfortable because they couldn't believe that I had the courage to speak out and say, wait a second, criticism of a foreign country is now called bigotry. It's now called hatred. But that's where this is going. Our First Amendment rights are being infringed upon. Certain parts of the Bible are now considered under IHRA hate speech. That's very dangerous, and every American should be speaking out against this.
And thank you for saying that about wanting to invite rabbis there and other Jewish Americans, because I think it's important what you just said, because there are people who are Jewish all over the world who totally disagree with what they're watching the government of Israel do. And it doesn't make them less Jewish, and it certainly can't make them anti-Semitic if they're Jewish. And yet people are being accused of that. We only really see this in the United States. We don't see this anywhere else. Somehow it's inculcated inside the United States, this sense that if you criticize Israel, you're somehow anti-Semitic or discriminatory. That's so weird.
Yeah. No, you're exactly right. In fact, I talk to the Jewish rabbi. We talk almost every day. We check in very regularly, and he is so incredible. And he said, Carrie, I've been speaking out against Zionism for 40 years. And I even asked the commissioners. I said, I read his statement because he wasn't invited. And I read his statement and I said, so is this statement by a Jewish rabbi anti-Semitic? And their answer was yes. So now Jewish rabbis are anti-Semites. This is crazy. You hate to laugh because there really is, you know, hatred of all people. There's hatred of Jews, there's hatred of Christians, there's hatred of Muslims, and we must be speaking out against it. But what do we define as actual anti-Semitism? And I don't believe anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism.
Well, especially when it comes to speaking on behalf of the 18,000 or so children that have been killed in Gaza, which is what you were doing. What child deserves to die for thoughts? Obviously, they weren't Hamas. Obviously, they weren't terrorists if you're 12 years old. But that's actually what's happened. That's the argument that you were and others have been trying to make, who are then called anti-Semites.
Yeah, you know, I'm a pro-life Christian. I've been a pro-life Christian my entire life. When I saw what was happening in Gaza, the least that I could do was speak out.
Yeah.
The least that I could do. And I have a platform. And so I started speaking. I started posting about the starvation in Gaza. Muslims and Christians mm-hmm. are Palestinians, and there's Jewish Palestinians. And so the fact that they're criticizing me for posting about the Palestinians and where they were really triggered that I wore the Palestinian flag. They really did not like that. And I wore it with the American flag because I do want a free Palestine. I have talked to people in Gaza through social media, and they have showed me the horrors and the suffering and the injustice that they are facing. And I have a duty as a pro-life Christian. Otherwise, I would be a hypocrite myself mm-hmm. if I did not speak out about the genocide, a Holocaust of our time. And every Christian should be speaking out against this.
I told my wife this morning when I was thinking about this interview that I was going to do with you, and we were sitting around, and I said to her, I said, you know, I'm not the greatest Catholic in the world, but my wife became Catholic when we got married. She was Baptist, and we brought up our four children as Catholics and done everything that I think I'm supposed to do. So I do the best I can. But I got really angry this morning when I watched the report of what the Israeli government did to literally shut down the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, because I just thought it was terribly, terribly disrespectful to my faith and to the faith yeah. of people all over the world. I wonder what your thoughts were when you saw that.
To be honest with you, I wasn't surprised because this is what the Israeli government, this is how they treat Christians. I've talked to Christians there. They say they're spit on. They say that they're not able to access certain holy sites. They say that they have to go completely, 2 hours out of the way just to go 2 miles. This is how they view Christians. And it's very, very, very disgusting. And I am so disappointed in Bibi Netanyahu, who claims that he Judeo-Christian values. This is how they treat Christians in the Holy Land. This is how they treat Cardinal Pizzaballa, not even able to access the Holy Sepulchre during Holy Week.
Yes.
Shame on him. Shame on Bibi Netanyahu. You are not a friend to Christians at all. Stop pretending that you are. You are not a friend. You are not an ally. You are our enemy, Bibi.
Here he is, as a matter of fact, saying that, in fact, nobody respects or takes care of Christians like he does and like they are protected and taken care of in Israel. Roll it, if you could, Gene.
And our policy has been absolutely pro-Christian. The absurd thing is that we're being accused for protecting Christians and this fallacy, this lie, this vilification that Israel is against Christians, when Israel is the only country in the Middle East and one of the few countries in the world that stands up for Christians.
Interesting. Your reaction?
What's so disgusting about it is that they're claiming that it was safety concerns. Okay, so you're telling me a country that is committing genocide, bombing women and children, care about safety? No, he doesn't care about safety. He's a liar. He is a liar. And I honestly believe he is a very evil man. And so I don't believe one thing that comes out of his mouth. And the only good thing that came out of this, Rick, is that people are waking up and they're seeing, no, this is not our ally. These are not our allies. Mm. This is how they view Christians. They don't let Christians access their holy sites in Jerusalem. This is what they think of you as Christians. They don't respect you. And it's all lies that come out of his mouth. So the only good thing is that people are waking up and realize they're not our ally, they're our enemy.
They sure are, but it's still hard. That's why let's try and close with you now. What was it like for you when you... This was a momentous moment in your life. You knew that the words that were about to come out of your mouth were going to be literally ringing from every capital in the world, and that people would be replaying this moment. What were you thinking? What was your expectation? What got you? What gave you the courage to do something that I can't even put words to help people around the world explain how dangerous it is in America? Dangerous it is in America to do what you did.
Thank you. Yeah, it's like I'm brought back to that moment. And I just knew even with the backstory of how Dan Patrick and Paula White tried to kick me off the commission, with all the backstory of how the White House tried to call me, ask me to resign, I knew that God had me for that moment, for that exact moment. Huh. And he was with me. He was with me. I felt peace. I felt a sense of just calmness. And I just simply was asking questions. And I never thought it would, you know, blow up like this, but I was just being obedient. And I just knew that I had to stand up for the truth. And I had to stand up for really who I am. You know, as I said, I'm a pro-life Christian. And so I must speak out. Speaking out against a genocide in Gaza by the hands of the Israeli government doesn't make you a new hater. Yeah. And I was so, I felt so disrespected sitting up there. And I even said, as a Catholic, I'm not a Zionist. So are you claiming that all Catholics are anti-Semites? That we're hateful bigots, according to you? And basically the answer was yes. I reject that. And as a Catholic, and I want many Catholics across this nation, and they have rejected it. In fact, I had Bishop Strickland, a very well-known bishop in this country, come out and say, Carrie, he defended me just the other day on Tucker Carlson, and he made a beautiful statement. And he said, they were mad that Carrie dared to speak the truth. And that's why they're upset with me. That's why I was removed. I dared to speak truth to power. They thought I was just going to go along with it. Oh, yeah, anti-Zionism, anti-Semitism. No. I'm not going to let them sit there and take away my religious freedom and say my faith is a hateful, bigoted faith while claiming that they're some victim. No, I am the victim here. They removed me from this commission and they took away my First Amendment rights. And so I just knew that I had to speak, and I did know that there would be repercussions, but it was worth it in the end. I would rather stand on biblical principles and my Catholic faith than go along and lie just to be liked and just to feel popular.
Well, most people would be afraid to do what you did. They really would be in the end, because they know exactly what the blowback would be. The only thing that's to the advantage of someone like you today, and I'm not saying you did it because of this, I think you would have done it just knowing your character and getting to know you from the interviews you've done with my friends Tucker, my friend Cenk Uygur. I mean, people on the left and on the right, you've become a cause celeb all of a sudden in the United States. And I know that wasn't your intention. I can tell. But there's something that's happening in our country, your country and mine, that would not have happened in the past. You see, in the past, with someone like me, when I said something similar, you would be buried and you wouldn't have an outlet. Because it was either go on CNN, go on Fox, go on NBC, or a local newspaper. That's it. Today, you've got a Rick Sanchez, a Cenk Uygur, a Tucker Carlson, a Candace Owens, and we get to tell your story. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a bit of a differentiator. Thank God.
Well, I'm thankful for people like you, people like Tucker Carlson, who have their own platforms, who are not beholden to big donors telling them what to say and how to think. So no, you're right. If it wasn't for social media, if it wasn't for these canceled, platformers like Megyn Kelly and Tucker Carlson and you, then you're right. I would probably have just, been buried and nobody would have given me a platform. So it takes courage. Courage is contagious. You know, one person speaks out, and then another, and then another, and then pretty soon there's an entire movement happening. And people are starving. That's what Bishop Strickland said. People are starving for the truth. They're starving for authenticity. They're starving for it. And so when they see someone that is willing to just be authentic and say, wait a second, there's a genocide happening. I can't deny my eyes, and I'm going to speak out against it. That is contagious.
I was jogging through the streets of Moscow on a Saturday morning when I listened to your conversation with Tucker, and I stopped and I started texting Tucker, and he started texting me back. And I was like, this is fantastic. My gosh, this is so, and I was so inspired by you, Carrie. I was so inspired. I felt like the Rocky song in my head, and I started jogging. and then I called Natasha, our booker, and I said, get her. Tell her, I want, because your story is, what you just said is true. Your story is uplifting. It's hard sometimes. Mm-hmm. We have kids. We have mortgage payments. We don't want to lose our jobs, and we know we'll be fired. You lost yours. They tried to humiliate you. And you're doing fine, it looks like. You're doing fine.
Yeah, thanks be to God. I know, and I've known this my entire life since I spoke out at the pageant. There is nothing more important than standing on truth, because the truth is like a lion. You let it out and it defends itself.
Yeah.
And so I never knew this was going to happen, that the whole world would be talking about, you know, what I said at that commission. But to be honest with you, Rick, I was just being Carrie. I was just being myself. I was just being that girl that I've always been. And I wasn't going to sit there and let all these fancy people with fancy titles tell me what I think. You know, I know what I think, and I know what I see with my own eyes. There's a Holocaust, a genocide, and it is so evil to tell me that I must bless it and I must support it. I reject that. In Jesus' name, I reject that.
Miss California, my God, you've come a long way. What's next, by the way, before I let you go? And if somebody wants to get a hold of you, or you've got a cause you want our viewers to help you with, where do they go? What do they do? Help us.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, you can find me on X, Carrie Prejean 1, and then on Instagram, just Carrie Prejean Bowler. But what's next for me is I actually started a media company, and I'm going to be traveling the world, and I'm going to be interviewing people that are facing any religious persecution. So my first documentary is coming out within the next 2 months, and it's going to be on the COVID nurses that were fired for not getting the COVID vaccine due to their religious beliefs. So I'm just going to be taking this Religious Liberty Commission to the people, which is pretty amazing.
That's, you know, it's fascinating. At some point, I'll tell you some stories. Maybe I'll share my contact, and I can tell you about some tips of some areas. Since I'm on this side of the world, I can tell you about some of the cases of a lack of religious liberty that are taking place over here as well. So I'll look
forward. I'd love to chat with you. Yeah, get my number and reach out.
That'd be great. Listen, thank you so much. I mean, you speak from the heart. And I can tell, I can almost feel you moving a lot of people out there who are listening to your story, who've been in similar situations, and hopefully you give them the courage to have the kind of conviction that you've shown. So thank you for sharing your story.
Thank you. You as well, Rick. Keep up the good work.
Thank you so much, Carrie. Wow. Well, a great interview. I mean, it just felt like something different. She's such a real person. And whether you agree with her or disagree with her, she stood by what she believed, her conviction, what it's all about in a world filled with so much fakeness and so many narratives that are created for us that don't come from us, but from someplace else. Anyway, we had a great guest yesterday as well. Trita Parsi was on the show. And he, too, is one of the most sought-after experts on the war in Iran. He's Iranian-born, but he got his PhD from the United States, right? And he was our guest here yesterday, and you guys watched, and you had a lot to say about it. Most of it good, by the way. Let's start with PsychCon 10905. He says, NATO was made for defense, not for illegal wars. Thanks for your attention to this matter. Well, thank you. Sanji5 says, Mr. Parsi is very calm and collected in the way that he presented his thoughts and projected a thorough knowledge of the situation. Thank you, Rick, for the interview. Pharma Heretic doesn't agree. She says, Trita Parsi is a paid shill who made his career working for Western think tanks. He has no real connections in Iran beyond some pro-Western liberals. Why do you keep giving this person exposure as if he is an expert on Iran? Actually, because I think he is. But I respect your point of view. Alter Fish says, rate Trita Parsi as the most knowledgeable analyst on the ongoing war in the Middle East. Thank you, Rick, for introducing Trita to the audience. Indeed, never heard a speaker reveal the ambiguity between ground situation and media propagandas like him. And then Old Novalis says, you're asking the wrong question. It is not a question of how they didn't see what will happen, right, about the Strait of Hormuz. It's incompetence. Trump is not looking for a way out of the war. He's looking to escalate. So there you go. Thank you so much. Thank you for enjoying our guests and commenting on them. Me too. As a matter of fact, tomorrow, are you ready for this? Should I do a drum roll? Tomorrow, Professor Jeffrey Sachs one of the most recognized experts on geopolitics in the entire world, is going to be joining us as well. So get ready. I may not be able to sleep tonight. I'm so excited about having Professor Sachs on. I have a lot of respect for him, and I hope to hit him with some good challenging questions so he can better help us all better understand the situation. Wow. Tens of millions of you have been watching us because of some of the shows that we're doing. I want to thank my staff, and I want to thank most of all you for being there. You can catch what we do, comment to us, go to our pages on BitChute or on X or Spotify or any other portals where you can find the Sanchez Effect and what we do. I'm Rick Sanchez. Thanks so much for being with us, and thank you for letting us into your home.